All right, welcome to the latest edition of That's So Cincinnati. It's so Cincinnati of us to continue to do this podcast. We're relentless, Jason. Jason Williams, Paul Leonard Jr. here with you from Cincinnati.com, the Cincinnati Inquirer. How are we doing?
We're looking good.
Yeah? Excited? I'm excited about today's episode. 2 weeks.
2 weeks, baby. Two weeks from today.
2 weeks until midterm elections, and then what I like, aftermath, fallout, yeah. Finger pointing, sifting through rubble.
That's always, there's the adrenaline rush of election night. You know, it's like covering a big game, but then it's the day after where you're really breaking everything down and seeing when everything starts to settle in and
what really happened.
What really happened.
And that's what it really means in the big picture.
Yeah. It's a pretty exciting day for journalists.
It is. It is. It's totally when I know you have a people might not know this, that you have a sports background. I don't know.
I do.
We don't know how much we've ever really discussed it on here. I mean, you've covered baseball and lots. I mean,
college football, basketball.
When you do that stuff, like, I always joke, election night is the one night a year that news people get to be sports writers.
That's right. They do.
You're here late.
You get free food.
You get free
food. Free pizza. Which,
and,
you know, as sports writers, you get every
free
game.
Food just follows us.
Exactly.
It's great.
A little pizza on legs.
That's it. It's always something. It's always interesting to me how, you know, you do that one year where, like, the entire newsroom turns into – the one day year where the entire newsroom turns into a sort of a sports department in a little bit.
It does.
It's writing on deadline all – you know, what used to be back in the day really writing on deadline. Yeah. Like a hardcore, like a Friday night
football.
I feel
like we're always on deadline now, though.
Yeah, now deadline is 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
But back in the day – back in the day when you and I were, like, grinders on, like, high school beats and stuff, Friday night football, when you'd come in at – You'd sit down at 10:45 and you had to have your full story done by like 11. There's very few rushes in your career like a hardcore on deadline for the paper football gamer.
Right.
Dude, those were intense. But election night's just like, you know, used to be just like that now. Now, though, this is a big one. Obviously, we've talked about how big it is. This one's pretty big. When you throw midterms in, it just seems like there's just – because the country is – this is the first big election since the entire country has become so political. I mean, really.
First post-Trump
election. The 16 presidential election, obviously, it just changed the way people view politics and the engagement that you've seen in politics. So to have the first real huge election, which the first one that everyone –
General election. Since, yeah.
Excuse me, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. The first one since then that has this sort of like – drawing power. People have pointed to this for a couple of years now.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's like billboards all up and down 71 and 75. And they're electronic billboards that just say vote.
Yeah.
And they're red billboards with the big white letters vote. And it has the date.
Yeah.
And I've never seen those before, but I keep seeing those all the time now. I think I saw two of them on my way into the
office. That's the most important thing. It's one of the numbers that I will look at first. Is how many people came out to vote, like, and particularly new demographics. I mean, we've heard so much nationally and locally about young people feeling politically inspired. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at some of the stuff, like some of the, you know, particularly with these high school shootings, we've seen huge responses. I wonder how much that will translate to the voting booth. You know what I mean?
It's always been a challenge to get younger adults to turn out. It's just through history. It's always been
absolutely
hard for that. And so will some of these things finally get, you know, folks that are in their 20s, early 20s out to vote?
Yeah.
It'll
be one of the most interesting numbers to watch. Obviously, a ton of local races, which we've gone over issue one. We've gone over issues 10 and 11 last week. If you haven't gotten caught up to speed on those, please do that. Really good conversation on all that stuff and all you need to know. So just go back and listen to some of the previous That's Cincinnati podcasts before you go out and vote. There is a – state treasurer race this year, which is where our today's guest is from, Rob Richardson, who you probably remember him from the mayoral race in 2017. Mm-hmm. Now he's running for state treasurer, but a really unique perspective on Cincinnati's spot in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, only Cincinnati in running for statewide office, and you know, because we are so Cincinnati.
Yeah,
we wanted to have the only Cincinnatian in to talk about running for statewide office, and I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, and he was on. You know, he was a chair of the UC board. I mean, he's done a ton of stuff here locally, and obviously, you know that. Anyway, really excited about having Rob on, so you can stick
Me
around
too.
For that. We'll have our conversation with Rob Richardson. You were writing last week about this U.S. Senate race, and I'm bringing it up because Jim Renacci is running against Sherrod Brown, and Renacci was in here.
He was right here in the newsroom.
The newsroom, and he said some interesting things, and you then said some interesting things. Give a recap for people of what has gone down in this, and because it's gotten into a really weird spot.
So Jim Renacci was in for the editorial board endorsement meeting last Wednesday, and just drops a bomb. You know, it makes accusations against Sherrod Brown, and he says, and I'm quoting here, he says, he told the editorial board, quote, "I've had multiple women contact me and say, I was assaulted by Sherrod Brown." So when I wasn't actually in the meeting, but when our folks asked follow-up questions, well, do you have names? Do you have documents? Do you have tapes, proof, anything? Nothing. And then he did say that he referred these women to an attorney, but then when our people followed up and said, who's the attorney? He provided nothing. No name, nothing about this attorney. So, Jim Renacci has not been a strong candidate. He jumped in the race late in January. He was really a sub when Josh Mandel had to drop out for personal reasons in January. And so Jim Renacci moved over from the governor's race, which he wasn't going to win either. And, you know, he says Trump gave him the blessing, whether Trump did or not. He did meet with Trump, and then after he met with Trump, he jumped in the race. But he's just not – he doesn't have statewide name ID. He's not run a good campaign. No one really knows who he is. And so – you know, this just reeks of desperation.
It feels like a Hail Mary.
It does. A Hail Mary, as I called it, by a fifth-string JV quarterback.
Yeah.
sorry, I'm not tooting my own horn. I thought it was very, very, very low blow. Like, hey, this is serious stuff. If you are, like, I'm not saying whether it's true or not. What I'm saying is, in this day and age, you got to come with proof. If you're going to make that accusation, you need to back it up. Otherwise, it raises questions about, are you making this up? Are you just being desperate? The Hail Mary, whatever. So then the next day, he did have a statement from an attorney. I don't know if it was the same attorney or not, but he had an attorney who one of these women allegedly, and the attorney released a statement about it. Basically saying, yeah, this happened. Sherrod Brown and back in the 80s did something inappropriate to her. And then, you know, we wrote about that. But it's still, you know, I don't even know what to say about it, because it's just, you know, you try to separate this from the whole Kavanaugh thing. And I know there have been readers that have criticized me for criticizing Renacci, saying that, you know, because I didn't bring in the whole Kavanaugh thing. And, like, to me, these are just two separate things. And so let's not jumble them together. You know, I focus on Ohio politics and greater Cincinnati politics. So I'm focused on that race. And I just see it as, I just saw it in poor taste. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. Certainly, if it is true, need to have all the proof there to show it, and then it needs to be dealt with however way it should be dealt with. But until that point, it's just a political, it's really the ugly side of politics, to put it succinctly.
Is this, where was this race at? I mean, so this race was at a point where Renacci was just, had no shot.
And he still doesn't have a shot.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's almost like, were you just trying to generate any headline you could to get some attention, whether it's just crazy attention, nasty attention, whatever attention it is, it's like, oh, you get people talking. Do you see what Renacci said, or Renacci, or, I know some people probably say his name is Renacci, but whether that was his goal, I raised the question, that was it his goal to get something on the record so that he can turn around and cut an ad off of it? There's a lot of times, you'll see in ads where they'll run clippings from newspapers or from, somebody said this in the media, or so I don't know what his goal was there, but certainly it has gotten some attention.
Yeah. So that was going on. That was quite a thing. And then this weekend you pulled out a Jeff Pastor. You were talking about Jeff Pastor.
I was. So jumping back to City Hall, it's not even an election year, but City Hall has just been nuts, which we've talked about on a couple episodes with Sharon Coolidge. But last week, Jeff Pastor, Republican, rookie Republican councilman, jumped over and basically broke ranks from Mayor John Cranley's coalition on council and voted with the so-called progressives, the five progressives, to override a mayoral veto. It gave him a supermajority of 6 votes. The mayor is powerless when you have 6 votes. And so basically all they did was it divvied up all the surplus money from the 2018 budget.
Mm-hmm. Is that going to be a thing to expect more of going forward?
Don't know yet. I don't think it'll be a regular thing. I did ask Pastor, I'm like, are you crossing over? I asked him, are you leaving the Republican Party to go be with, the progressive Democrat? He said, no, I'm a Republican through and through. I'm a fiscal conservative. But there, and he did say there are some tugging at him right now from both sides. And I think he's in this position where he's really trying to figure himself out. He's, 10 months into his political career, and he's really trying to still establish his identity as a politician. And so it'll be interesting to see how he navigates things moving forward. I expect that he'll stick mostly with the Cranley coalition, but I think there'll be times you'll see him cross over and go with the progressives. If only because it's going to help him, or at least the idea is that it potentially helps him with Democrats in a very Democratic city down the road with Democratic voters. And so if he can be seen as, hey, reaches across the aisle, works with Democrats, maybe that he thinks that could resonate when he's up for re-election in 2021.
All very interesting. You mentioned Mayor Cranley, and so I think it's fitting that we move it forward to one of the people who ran against him back in 2017, and we can move over to the interview segment, and that means a time to welcome Rob Richardson in. So we're gonna go. We'll go to that. All right, interview time here on That's So Cincinnati, and happy to have Rob Richardson in here with us. You ran for mayor in 2017. You are on the UC board. You're UC board chair, running for state treasurer right now. You have to be exhausted right now. The end of the race, I always feel for people. It's just like it's such a long grind, and you get to right here. You just have to see that light at the end of the tunnel and say, please, please get here right now, right?
Yeah, it is. First of all, thank you both for having me.
Thanks for coming.
No, good to be here. It is a grind, man. It's and coming from here, Southwest Ohio, I don't have the I will say advantages of being centrally located, or being from a place like Cleveland, where obviously more votes are for the Democratic side. So you guys spend time there. So it's been, you know, hard. We've had to go. I mean, there's been days we've gone. I think we've done one day we did Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland, Columbus, back to Cincinnati, and that's. And, you know,
I'm gonna guess you didn't fly in a private plane.
No,
that was all. That was all on the road.
Yeah, this is not a glorious life. You know, running for office. It's, you know, I tell people, and it is really hard. And when, you know, I think particularly in this environment, what's so unfortunate is that I think people have such a jaded view of anyone in public service, anyone in politics, and no matter what side you're on, people just view you with the sense of suspicion. And, you know, what I can tell you is there's a lot of good people in this business on both sides. There are bad people on both sides as well. But it's tough. You give up a lot to do this. And what I talk to anyone who is pursuing something that they really want to do that's hard and difficult, whether it's being an entrepreneur, whether it's running for office or running for particularly a statewide office like this, you know, my advice to people is you have to be willing to embrace struggle. It's one thing to have a idea of everything is going to go positive and you should think positively and see yourself there, but also understand that if you want it bad enough, you have to embrace the pain, the struggle, and the sacrifice it's going to take to get that. That's just a true statement. And anybody in public service is usually sacrificing a lot. Like this is a lot that one has to give up to do this, but I believe most people are in it because they want to do something that is greater than just serving themselves.
Have you made it to, made stops in all 88 counties?
All 88 counties, no. Regions.
Yeah,
I've been to a majority of the counties. It's, you know, I don't think that's something that's feasible to do in one statewide run. Now, if things go as I hope they do, I think that's eventually that's something that I would do. But we have made an effort to hit places that often Democrats don't hit, because I think it's important that people see you, touch you. I mean, in the age of social media and so much money spent on commercials, people still, particularly in smaller towns, want to meet the people that they want to vote for. And if you don't go to get the votes and you don't, and people don't see you, touch you, reach out to you, you're putting yourself at a huge disadvantage. And so, you know, we made an effort to try to get to as many places as we could. That's really difficult, but I do believe we've been intentional about doing that.
Are you, you mentioned not being, you know, you talked about Cleveland, and that's such a huge Democratic area and a place where, you know, you rely on a lot of votes as a Democrat. Sure. You as a Cincinnatian, we don't see many Cincinnatians run for statewide office. Well, I think we talked about off the air here that, you know, there's not been a Cincinnatian in statewide office since Joe Dieters in the early 2000s. And there really hasn't been that many through the years. You're vying to be the first African-American Democrat elected from, is it Southwest Ohio or Greater Cincinnati? I always think it's as the same area, but.
Well, so let's separate those two things. I would be the first African-American Democrat elected, period, from anywhere statewide.
That's right, yep.
So, but then, you know, as you said, that we don't have a lot of folks run for this area. And I think that's why, you know, Democrat or Republican, like I'm going to make sure that our town is represented. And, you know, it's one of the things we complain about here all the time that, you know, Columbus gets everything and, Cleveland seems to get their share. And then, you know, maybe they'll think about Cincinnati afterwards. And, you know, that's not right considering that, you know, we're the fastest growing city in the Midwest. We have the second largest university. And we offer a lot to the state, and I don't always feel as if, and this is not unique to any one party, this is across the board, we're kind of thought of as an afterthought. You know, when you know, the universities, the first university that usually gets any resources is Ohio State. And I love Ohio State, but, you know, I love the University of Cincinnati a little more, I'm biased. And, but I think it would be good for the state if they realized what we actually bring here to help the whole economy.
Thanks for correcting me on that. You're vying to be the first African-American Democrat elected statewide in history of Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, that's correct. And, you know, when I say that, of course, I don't run on that. And why I don't is because it's like, you know, that is, there have been people that have run before me. Some of it's just the opportunity, the accident of the moment. It's not necessarily that I have any better skills than someone else.
Yeah.
It's, and you know, I want people to vote for me based upon the power of my ideas and my vision. Mm-hmm. And I'm very confident that, I bring a new perspective to this office and that people will vote for me based upon that and nothing else.
It's interesting. So what, when you're out there on the trail and you tell people you're from Cincinnati and you go to somewhere in Northwest Ohio or Southeast Ohio or Eastern Ohio, and do you think you get a little bit of a different reception in that, oh, because Cincinnati's sort of, it just, I don't, well, let me ask you this. Do you think the rest of the state looks at Cincinnati as being kind of on an island by ourselves down here? Or what, have you been able to gauge that?
The answer to that is yes, I do. I mean, yeah. I think people look at you just like, wow, you're from Cincinnati. Wow. I mean, they're like, so, and you're a Democrat, it's rough down there. And I said, well, you know, it's not always true. I think actually being from this area helps. And so, you know, when you're around people that always think the same, always have the same perspective, you're not challenged, and you think all your ideas are good, and they're not.
Yeah.
And this goes true for any organization. And so, you know, when you go to a place like Cleveland, where it's been all Democratic, it's obviously that's encouraging if you're a Democrat. Mm-hmm. But I think what, you know, can happen is the same folks stay in power for such a long time that honestly some of the citizens become disengaged, which is dangerous as well. Mm-hmm. What we have going for us in Denver, in Hamilton County, is that we still have a very, I think, competitive environment. You can't be a Democrat here without having some Republican associates and friends, and at least knowing how to communicate and work with people. And I mean, so that's something that I think is a benefit being from this area, and I think actually helps me talk to a larger audience. Because again, you can get comfortable, I think, if you're in a situation where you're never challenged.
I know you were you're a big supporter of the streetcar as that thing came through. When you look at where that's at now, what is your thoughts on when you see where it's at, how to help it, maybe what's going wrong with it, or ways it can be easily fixable? What's your view on that project now as they try to figure it out?
Oh Lord, what a question there!
Yeah. I'm like,
you need to do it in 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
All right, we will. I will work on that. Look, I think the whole thing has been a disaster in terms of its implementation, how political it's become, and how, you know, we just can't figure out how to actually make things function and get it to work. It's a complex problem because sometimes politics is complex, and I supported making sure we didn't waste the dollars that were coming in from the state level. And there were millions upon millions of dollars that we would have to throw back, which would have been more complicated and cost us more money and opportunities based upon reputational and just resources. So that wasn't, to me, worth it at that time. And I hold to that. Where we got to go now is figure out how we're going to make it work, because and we have to figure out if there's going to be a next phase, how they're going to fund it. I think the citizens of Cincinnati will probably, and rightly so, probably don't want to. So there's going to have to be some level of state or federal cooperation to make that work, because I don't think it's fair to ask the taxpayers locally to take that on. So that's something that likely would have to happen. More importantly, though, getting outside the streetcar, to me, it's about making sure we have a strong regional transportation system.
Right.
And the conversation, the part that really frustrates me is that the conversation has been starts, ends on the streetcar. Like, you know, if I could trade you the streetcar for a comprehensive transportation system that connects people, that's what I would want. And that's what I've always wanted. And I think that's what's necessary for the city of Cincinnati to move forward and to become more competitive.
We sat on this podcast and talked about the need to fix the bus system here and how that's overlooked because it's not as you know, new and shiny and all those things, but how in actual implementation would be a real game changer. I mean, how often have we talked about that? I mean, that's
a lot,
the stuff that isn't the happy, new, fun, big time projects are usually the ones that can be the biggest difference maker in those type of situations.
I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, and I think, you know, being able to have a mature conversation about what that looks like, and that's tough too, because all the conversations have been really difficult. We've had many opportunities to look at how we do transit, and I just don't think we've been able to really move the ball forward. And that's been looking as a person who's both interested in the city that I love, and as a person who's observed politics. It's just really frustrating to see that we really in the last 20 years have really made zero progress there.
Yeah, there's really no. I mean, as a state treasurer, there's nothing you could really do in terms of helping to get funding for something like that, right?
Well, or I mean, not directly from the office. I mean, there are some things you can do with infrastructure, but what my role would be is, you know, first of all, I would be the only person, Democrat or Republican, from Southwest Ohio, and I've made very clear that I'm going to advocate for Cincinnati because it's important. So, being in an executive position matters, because I'll have though you don't have complete control, I do have influence. Being the chief, you're the chief financial officer, chief banker, and chief investment officer for the state. So I can do other investments, and I can certainly encourage others. I mean, that's where I think there's opportunities to hopefully get some support across the aisle, because there's a lot of Republican representation down here, and I would want to work with them to figure out how can we do this. This is necessary for our region to make sure we can get more jobs, keep and retain talent. Like, we got to do these things, and I would hope to be able to work with folks to make it a nonpartisan conversation. You know,
yeah.
It used to be when we talked about transit, even rail, that was something Republicans supported. Because, you know, you would talk to a lot of folks and they would understand that, you know, they didn't want to see government in a whole lot of things, but areas where the government was supposed to be was supposed to be security, and then providing infrastructure because and transportation, because those things help move economies. And, you know, my hope, I don't know when this is going to happen, is that we can get back to these rational type of conversations. Yeah. And everything doesn't become hyper. Some things, politics, there's a place for it, but everything can't be hyper-political at every single moment.
And you know what? And that's a message you've been pushing since you started running for office. I mean, I remember us talking when you ran for the mayor in 2007. That was last year. It seems like so long ago.
Seems like ages ago.
It does. So you got in January of 2017, so almost 2 years ago. But I remember you were really you kept it very positive in that race. And I mean, that's just really your style, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's tough in politics, you know.
Yeah.
It is. It's tough, and you know what I do say is that there comes moments where I definitely kept it positive, but I will respond, and my goal is not to respond in kind. So I'm not going to make up stuff about people or completely come out of a left field, but I will respond with what I believe are a person's positions, what they've taken, and how I disagree with that direction, which I think is fair game in politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what I won't do, what I've never done, is take someone's personal life or try to smear them or, you know, call them names. And believe me, it's very,
commend you for that.
It's very hard not to, though, sometimes. But
sure.
But I believe that if we're ever going to move forward and have collective action, which I think is important, you know, particularly for my side of the aisle, because what I think is, like, if folks get disengaged with the process, and you know, that doesn't actually help more people get engaged and vote. They become more suspicious, which I think makes things worse for everyone. And for Democrats to win, honestly, they have to have a collective amount of support. It doesn't work as well if we try to push fear and division. It's just because a lot of folks on our side, to their benefit and to their detriment, everyone likes to see things from, like, a professorial point of view, and you'll lose a lot of people if you're too divisive. I think the other side can do that a little bit better, and I just don't think, I'm not wired that way, and I actually don't think you have to do that to win. What you do have to do, and it's harder to do, is to inspire people and engage people, and that takes a while, but I think it's worth it.
Do you? I want to ask you, and this is something I think I asked you about. I did a column on it after the mayor's race last year, and I thought it was very interesting what you said. And you talked about what you learned from that race. Can you talk about that and then how that's helped you and, you know, what, I guess, what did you learn from that race that has helped you in now your current race?
Oh, man, there's so much to be learned from that race. It was, I think I told you this, you know, running for office is a humbling experience.
Yeah.
And I now have greater appreciation for anyone in politics. You know, the other part of it is it takes a while for people to know who you are. Mm-hmm. And I had assumed because I had done things and I had some media coverage that more people knew my name than they actually did. You know, I had a radio show. I was on UC's board for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I was chairman of the board, pretty high profile chairman in terms of my interaction with the media. So I assume all that translated. But the truth is, it didn't, because people didn't see me in that context. So I learned that people had to see me in that context. Now, I believe once people saw me, I was able to convert a lot of folks. You know, and so I learned early on in this race that we have to get out there early, engage early, mm-hmm. Make sure that the press knows about the things we're doing. And, you know, so that's what I sought to do. You know, I also learned that this is this is tougher than it looks on TV. Mm-hmm. You have to, particularly those debates and forums I had with the mayor's race, I believe really sharpened my message and sharpened my answers. It helped me understand, and I had a pretty good level of understanding of how things worked, but it really was another level. It's, you know, it's one thing to see it from afar, but it's another thing to actually get in the midst of it. So you could be a consultant, you can help others, but it's nothing like when you actually do it. You know, finally, I think what was really difficult is that I had been, I've worked very hard in my career, and I got to a point where I really didn't have to depend upon a whole lot of people to do things.
Yeah.
This, no matter who you are, you depend upon so many others. You cannot do this by yourself. And so it was humbling how many people you have to reach out to, how often you have to stay on the phone, and how many times you have to take rejection and keep calling and calling and calling, and then, you know, figure your way through. You get criticized by the media when you might think it's unfair, and you got to learn how to not take it too personally. That's hard, by the way, but you got to learn.
You're good at that, too. I commend you for that as well.
I'm working on it. It's an evolving process. But it's necessary because, you know, look, I think leaders are held fairly so, should be, to a higher standard. And so I still believe that despite how hard it's been, that it's a worthwhile endeavor, that you can make a difference from these positions. And my goal will be to show how that's possible when I get there.
You know, I respected you a lot for, you know, you finished out your term, 9-year term on the UC board, and your last year was 16, and you got to be the chair of the board that year. And I remember asking you a lot. I was always bugging you about, are you running for mayor? Are you running for mayor? But, you know, you finished out your term. Then in that January, you announced running for mayor. I'm of the belief, had you, you know, and I respect you for the decision, like, I'm of the belief, had you gotten into that race maybe in September or August or October even, that the result could have been different, and it could have been you and Yvette and moving on to the – do you ever think back on that? I mean, do you have regrets on that, or –
So, no, that's a good point. I agree with your assessment. I think that's a plausible scenario, that I certainly could have at least came out of the top two. But I go from a philosophy of life that I have no regrets, only lessons.
Yeah.
And I would not have changed it. You know, UC was at we were at a critical moment. There's a lot of things going on. I mean,
you were?
Yeah. I mean, we had the death of Samuel DeBose. A former officer of ours was on trial for murder. It was a tense time on campus. Mm-hmm. So we were, president left at that time, President Ono. We were in a presidential search.
Football coach.
I just felt I felt it would have been irresponsible to step away, essentially. And if I would have done that for a political expedience, I think that, A, it's not who I am, but B, yeah, I think that would have reflected on what type of leader I was. So,
yeah.
I mean, I have zero regrets on that, honestly. And, you know, I just learned that wasn't enough time. I mean,
yeah, it's
a lot. I've learned it was probably a bit ambitious to think that you can launch a campaign in essentially a couple months.
Yeah.
But look, we got nearly 21% of the vote really quick.
Yeah.
And if you look at the section of votes that I received, I mean, they weren't, you know, it wasn't like it was just one section of folks. It was some conservative folks. It was some progressive folks. And it was some middle of the road folks. I mean, it's just, it was a collection of people.
It wasn't
like one demographic. So, you know, that taught me that my message can resonate wider than one audience, and I believe we're seeing that play out here.
Just a matter of getting out there earlier.
It's a matter of getting out there earlier and getting exposure earlier. What's harder on this side, though, is that with the mayor's race, the media paid attention, and and you know, I think I have a natural skill set of engaging the media and engaging audiences.
Agreed. Yeah.
The challenge is very little people care about this position. So it's been very hard. So I assumed I was going to get, if I thought these great ideas, the media would come and just crickets, like, no one's coming.
But I mean, so much of your race depends on the top of the ticket. And the same thing for Secretary of State and, you know, Auditor and Attorney General. And
I think it depends on the top of the ticket in this way. We need the top of the ticket to be very competitive and have a really close race, which I think is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that happens, we will be fine, because I think we'll have enough to make sure our message gets out there, and I think our message will resonate with enough folks. And again, I believe I have a little higher name ID too, and so that helps. And we've spent a lot of time in Cleveland. Polling shows I'm pretty well known here, and I believe I'll get some crossover votes here. So, you know, I see a path no matter what happens at the top. I think Sherrod Brown is going to win by a comfortable margin. So
landslide.
So I think, given that, if the best known Democrat is up by a landslide, it's unlikely that all those folks would shift and just go vote the other side across the board. I don't think that's likely.
Well, can we have a little bit of fun?
You have whatever fun you
want. I just want to ask you a few fun.
This is what happens every single time we do a podcast, is I get ready to wrap a segment.
Sorry.
And Jason likes to ask like three more questions. It's kind of like, it's actually sort of his thing. So I'm not shocked.
Fun on the campaign trail outside of home here, Cincinnati. What's your favorite restaurant, or what's the best place you've eaten at out in Ohio?
Oh my gosh. That's a tough question.
This is tougher than that streetcar question.
That came out of...
It is. There's a great Colombian place in Cleveland that's outdoors. I can't remember the name, but it just has really good food.
Okay.
And, Barrio. There you go. That's one of my favorite spots.
UC, what's your proudest thing that you accomplished on the UC board?
Okay. That one's
easy. What are you most proud about?
That one's easy. So... we did a lot of great things there, you know, but my proudest accomplishment was the UC Scholars Academy. And, you know, that's helping area high schools, particularly Hughes High School.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that. Yep.
Get into UC through a bridge program over the summer. You know, it's, you know, I remember one of the students there who after the ceremony, she said, look, the UC Scholars Academy gave me power, made me realize my own power. And, you know, so... She's going to UC now. We have a lot more students that wouldn't have gone to UC but for that program. So I'm definitely proud of that.
Do you go to basketball and football games regularly? Or
I have not been able to this year. I'm certainly excited about the opening of Fifth Third Arena. I will be there to see us beat Ohio State. Can't wait.
One last thing. Your all-time favorite UC, like, are you bigger basketball or football?
Close both.
Okay. Yeah. Who's your all-time favorite UC athlete?
Oh, man.
I was going to say just basketball or just football, but...
Okay, well, I'll go with...
Or you could give me a basketball and a football or...
Yeah.
Track, whatever.
It was, you know, it's between Nicky V and Kenyon Martin. I'm going to probably give Kenyon Martin because that was during my era.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if you remember that. I remember where I was when he got hurt. I said,
it's devastating.
My God. God, you got to be kidding me. We are cursed. It feels that way sometimes.
Yeah, that was devastating.
One of the saddest top – it's a top three saddest moment in Cincinnati sports history, like as a whole, like the city.
Where were you? You said you remember where you were at. Where were you?
I was at GE working as a co-op.
Okay.
It was my
you were still in school.
I was still in school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like And he said, Kenyon Martin went down. I said, what do you mean he went down? We were, oh my God.
That's right, it was during the day.
Like, and I mean, this probably is bad, but I felt like it was a death or something. It felt horrible. It was
They were so good. He was the best player in the country. They were dominating. I mean, it was going to be the year. Because the other thing that's forgotten is how it was just so many years of unrequited love in the NCAA tournament after, you know, really for about 5-6 years before that. But it was like, there's no way that's going to happen here. That team was so for real. And to have it happen in a pointless game in a conference tournament or whatever it was just brutal.
I just remember the moment. It was horrible.
Did you have, like, as board chair, were you, did you have to sit in or on interviews with the football coach, with Fickell and
I sat on all those interviews.
You did, okay.
Fickell less so, but the athletic director I chose, we were kept up to date. I mean, I knew as things were happening who we were hiring. They had to check in with me, but I hired Mike Bowen. I hired the current president, the interim president. I helped hire Santa. So I had a lot of involvement with that.
Absolutely. Well, Rob, thanks so much for joining us, man.
It's thanks for having me.
Sitting down and chatting, and good luck having this thing end in 2 weeks.
Two weeks, maybe.
Get back and like to like a little bit of normal life, a little bit, I guess.
Amen. Look forward to that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Huge thanks again to Rob Richardson for joining us. Just good stuff. That's sort of the perfect example we talk about all the time of on this podcast. We just want things to kind of naturally go as long as they go, and you know, he's so good, and there's really interesting conversations there. I'm really fascinated by the fact that Cincinnati is so underrepresented on the state level.
It is interesting to hear his perspective on that as he's been out all over the state campaigning. Because generally, I think that we in Cincinnati, we've talked about this before, that we sort of look at the rest of the state as like, okay, they're all over there. And the rest of the state looks at us as, okay, you guys are all down there on that island. And, you know, you hear about the joke of the state of Cincinnati. And I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah. But, I mean, so, you know, thanks to him for coming in and you know, it would not hurt to have a little bit of representation up there from down here, and a lot of. I was interested. I thought his response to the streetcar stuff was really interesting. I like to bring that up around you as a streetcar hater,
keeping our streak alive.
I mean, calling it a disaster, that's not breaking. But you know,
but to put some context on it, Rob Richardson Jr. was a leader on the two referendums in which the voters decided to keep moving forward or with the streetcar. And he helped lead the pro streetcar campaigns was a group called Cincinnatians for Progress. And he was right there in the middle of that. And that was one of his big early doings in politics. So he knows campaigns. He's worked on a lot of campaigns, and those were two of them.
Yeah. All right, it's time for the That's So Cincinnati moments of the week. Do you have one, or would you like
me? I got one. You go, though.
All right, I got one. Here's the thing. Normally, these That's So Cincinnati moments are things that always happen in Cincinnati, but this one is the exact opposite. But the fact that I saw it, like, it just feel like, I feel like whenever you come back on a flight into CVG, like, it's always like, oh man, how long have I been gone? Or this is different. You feel like something always hits you about how something's changed or different already, even though you've only been gone however long. Well, we went to Kansas City for the Bengals game, and that was to Cincinnati as well. And
very
and when we came back from CVG, I am going outside into the main parking garage there at CVG. As I walk in, there's music blaring, and there is literally a person standing on top of the roof of a car, dancing on top of the roof of a car at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday in the CVG parking lot. And I didn't know what to do or how am I supposed to react to this person.
You didn't have time for it, did you?
I had enough time to take a photo.
Oh, you did?
Well, yeah, I had to take a photo. Like, what is this?
Did you tweet it?
Of course. It's out
there. I missed
that. I don't know how you missed it. But I was like, and there is a that's a Cincinnati element to that of, you know, it's always something weird going on around here, I feel like. And it's like, it always shocks you, like, oh, that is not that there's lots of people dancing on the roofs of cars. That's a new one for me. It's always something.
It was like Teen Wolf surfing on the roof of the car.
It was not like Teen Wolf.
Do you remember Teen Wolf?
No. He was playing This Is America, song that I actually like. Yes, I know Teen Wolf.
Michael J. Fox.
Yes, my no team basketball, yes.
Okay.
Yes, amazing basketball player, that Teen Wolf. Very hairy, tough to defend. That's a scouting report. Tough to defend because of all the hair.
Was a ladies.
Very sweaty.
Was a ladies' wolf. Man.
It was a ladies' wolf, man. Anyway. Also what belongs, shout out to our visual journalist, Kareem Elgazar, on this one, reminding me that there's nothing more Cincinnati, that's more so Cincinnati than the Reds hiring Moeller product David Bell as their
manager. You just stole my that. So Cincinnati moment of the week.
Oh, is it?
But go for it. Keep going.
No, that was it. I said, you can take it from there.
I mean, is there anything? I think I'm a broken record here. Is there anything more so Cincinnati than that?
I mean, the Bell family has been part of the Reds forever. Then you bring in your GCL, your strong man of Moeller, which is why you should be excited.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he went to Moeller.
Yeah.
I didn't forget.
I mean, that's it. We love our own.
Was Mike Cameron the coach at Moeller when you were there, or did he already retire?
Yes, he cut me. And I've talked to him about this on one of our podcasts back when on the Reds the early days of the Reds podcast with Josh Sneed. We did one with Josh Sneed.
Oh, yeah. Cincy Shirts.
Yeah. And so he was the host. But he was out on tour for this one they were supposed to do, and they were having Mike Cameron, and he was official scorer at the Reds at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And they asked me to host. I was like, oh, yeah, sounds great. Knowing full well, I had not talked to him since high school when he was there, and I was totally just kind of open with the fact that, like, I'd like to start by letting you know that you cut me, because he might not remember that.
Did he remember it?
He said what he tells everybody is, I've cut a lot of people.
Yeah,
basically.
So that means he didn't remember it.
He did not remember. I don't, nor did I deserve to be remembered. I was not, it was not a memorable cut, I don't believe. I don't think it was particularly close.
Really?
However, it was final cuts, which I'll take that at that school.
Was that your senior year?
No, it was my freshman year. And I never came back because I didn't have any like perseverance like that. After that, I decided to become a writer, so that worked out too.
I was the opposite, man. I got cut my junior year from basketball. Came back. Not only did I make the team the next season, I started.
Oh, because you're just resilient. You're not going to take no
for an answer. I earned my way into the starting lineup after a few games.
You know what two dudes sitting around talking about their high school athletic careers is?
That's so Cincinnati, my friend. It's so sad, too.
It's really sad, especially because I didn't have one. I think I actually hold the record for most sports cut from in a single year.
Really?
My freshman year, yeah.
You didn't want to play me, man.
In hoops?
Yeah. I was tough.
What are you, 5'10"?
5'9". We had three guard offense, 5'9". We were all 5'9". We had two big
perhaps,
men.
Perhaps we should hold a one-on-one.
Is this where I get to?
Can we hold a one-on-one game?
How is every episode turning into me talking about high school? I haven't talked this much about high school since high school.
Because I'm not from
Cincinnati, so I don't talk about high school all the time.
Yes, you do.
Except for on this podcast, apparently.
Yeah.
Hey, I got
you got a thing? Are you going to shout out more high school classmates?
No, I think I'm done with that.
Okay. Are you going to talk more about how you don't like music?
No, but I need to add that, you know, there are a couple other bands that I do. I mean, I don't know if they're bands or not, but
I don't know. I forgot about the five greatest bands, and you didn't like any of them, and then you like you two, and that's fine. But you literally said you don't like music.
But wait, I totally forgot about this. From my 40th birthday, which was 3 years ago.
Tales from my 40th birthday.
My wife got me, because one of my buddies and I were big Richard Marx fans. Yeah. If only we had audio right now, or video. Look at your face. The look on your face is just...
Richard Marx, by the way, just showed up on an episode of The Bachelorette.
Really?
So, yeah, he did. Because it was totally a thing where they were doing one of these, like, their date things at...
It's good dating music.
They were doing, like, a tour of Capitol Records. And the way they made it look was, like, Richard Marx is a dude that just, like, sleeps in a corner studio there at Capitol Records. And, like, I tried him out.
Hey, he's a super talented songwriter.
Yeah, something like that.
He is. So, wait, 40th birthday.
Let me get this straight. Beatles overrated, Led Zeppelin and The Who, I don't care about them. Richard Marx, super talented songwriter. We now have pinned
Dude,
down
I
Jason
love
Williams'
Richard
musical
Marx,
taste.
And I love Tina Turner.
I
love Richard Marx. I love Tina Turner.
Your musical
Turner.
Tastes are just abysmal. It's just so
I get,
terrible.
No, like I got a buddy, like we love Richard Marx. So
you and your buddy sit around and listen to Richard Marx.
Well, you like when we used to go on trips.
Somebody
together,
that listens to this, can you please Photoshop one of these together? Jason and his buddy sitting around.
My buddy
like,
Matt Bremer.
Richard Marx tunes. This is
my buddy
bad.
Matt Bremer and I not
Matt Bremer. High school.
No, not a high school.
Fellow Richard
Cincinnati
Marx lover.
Friend.
Is there a Richard
he went
Marx
to Princeton
fan club?
High school. Huh?
Is there a Richard Marx fan club?
I don't know, but we went.
You should be
I
in
can,
it.
Can I get to this? My
Does
wife.
Does anybody care about anything? Like, hey, can anybody believe a word that you say?
So my wife, for my birthday, 40th birthday, gets me tickets to Richard Marx concert at some outdoor venue in Kettering, Ohio. It's like
you love him so. She knows you so.
So
well.
I'm like, I'm geeked, man. When she hands me this,
I'm geeked.
And then we get there, and we
is this like, real?
Yeah, this is real. And then like, so she didn't give me the tickets right away. She had ordered them, but she gave me like a little piece of paper. Like she made something out of construction paper.
Yeah.
Whatever.
With like a picture of Richard Marley cut out of a magazine.
Yes. Cut out of a magazine.
Yeah.
Yes. It was the happy 40th.
Oh my God.
And then, so I get the tickets, and it's like Huey Lewis in the News with Richard Marx.
Yeah, because he's not a headliner.
So it was Richard Marx. It was
in what world is Richard Marx selling tickets?
And it was so disappointing because it was Richard Marx.
Power of Love.
But it was like Richard Marx, acoustic Richard Marx.
What does it matter?
Yeah.
Are you there for his, like, piano? What is, like...
Like, we were the only two people. I mean, this place was packed.
You think he's
going to... This
gonna,
place is like...
think he'd get up there and shred?
This place is a little bit like Riverbend. I mean, it's a decent-sized
Yeah, they're
venue.
There for Huey Lewis.
And I think we were the only two people there for Richard Marx, and it was just disappointing.
Two dudes who in it for Richard Marx. I'm here for the Marx. Wow.
Hey, I'm not too...
you probably loved his music video in, like, the middle of Giant Stadium, the old Giants stadium where he's just like alone sitting there singing a ballad in an empty stadium. I mean, a true Richard Marx fan would remember that song.
Was he on his piano?
At one point, yeah, in the outfield, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on to the night.
Oh, my God. If there's anything, is it worse? What's worse?
Hold on to the memory.
Loving Richard Marx or then attempting to sing Richard Marx?
If only I could give you more.
I think it needs to end now. Thanks, everybody, for listening to That's So Cincinnati. We'll be back next Wednesday.
Be yours. No, 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 no.
And then 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking about fallout from the election. So hope everybody is prepared for that. Thank you to Richard Marx.
I'll be right
here
waiting
us.
For you.
Yeah. Indeed. Talk to you later.